The following program is intended for mature audiences.
This is a world you never understand, and you always fear. But you don't understand.
Because I'm a genius.
How come I know so much? What the hell is going on around here? Who the hell are you people?
It's getting weird!
And here we go.
It's the Riffs and Rants podcast with your host, Johnny Teflon.
All I know is this violates every canon of respectable broadcasting.
Yeah, that's right, Mr. Establishment. And we'll be right back after the first gem of the day. Good afternoon, and, well, possibly good evening around the world. Welcome to another edition of the Riffs and Rants podcast, starring yours truly, Johnny Teflon, right here in BigBoomRadio.com studios. Thank you so much for joining us. Started off with a fun tune tonight. That was Mr. John Fogerty, formerly of Creedence Clearwater Revival, doing his timeless hit Centerfield, and that was off of the album by the same name back in 1985. Fun thing about that album is, like a select few artists, he played all the instruments on the album and then had them mixed together and dubbed over in the studio. That's not easy to do. The only modern artist that I can think of that does that is Eddie Van Halen's kid, Wolfgang. Yeah. And his band, Mammoth WVH. Yeah. Does all the instruments in the studio, puts the whole thing together, has his musicians with him on tour, no doubt. But yeah, to sit there and be able to be that level of control freak and get that kind of product, that's dedication. Got to applaud that. And that song, well, what's not to love? It's all about the American pastime. Brings to mind soft summer days, the sprinklers hitting that freshly cut grass at the stadium, the smell of hot dogs in the air, right? Get yourself ice cold beer. That's America, baby. Well, at least it used to be. But we pick this song to open up tonight because, of course, yes, we do have an agenda, as always. Wanted to talk tonight about a little something called the Congressional Baseball Game for Charity. This is an event done yearly. It's missed a few years, but, you know, that's all right because it goes back to 1909. That's right, they've been doing it that long. And although it's, you know, kind of changed, it looks from years to years. You know, at this point, it's pretty much all just open just to Congress. Occasionally, some senators will jump in. But it's the Republicans versus the Democrats. I don't know where the independents fit in there, but I'm sure if they can swing a bat and throw a ball, they'll find a place for them somewhere. And, yeah, they just go out in the field and they play ball and, you know, for a brief period at least, they stop being politicians and they become real people or, you know, heaven forbid, real public servants because, like I said, they're raising money for charity. And they even have an offshoot that was created back in 2016. The Congressional Sports for Charity Foundation, and that provides support for worthy and effective charities serving children and their families in the greater Washington, D.C. area. But as it is, proceeds from admissions and probably a portion of sales of food and whatnot, and if they got any swag, that goes to help the Boys and Girls Clubs of Washington, D.C. Then they also partner with some of the charities that work with the Major League Baseball team, the Washington Nationals. And one of my favorites here, they also work in conjunction with the Washington Literacy Center, helping both adults and children learn how to read. Isn't that nice? It's just a shame that we don't see more stuff like this. Or more undertakings of this, or more selfless acts like this, from those individuals who we vote for to go represent us in our nation's capital. You know, we're their constituents, so, you know, we vote because we think a certain individual is going to, you know, share our views and push for our agenda and, in effect, be our lawyer when they go to Washington. And as we know, it's not always or, well, even often the case. But this is just, again, a nice thing. It cannot be overstated. I like to see more stuff like this, you know, and it hasn't always been all, you know, sunshine and roses. A few years ago, back in 2017, there was a mass shooting, which occurred actually at a practice session for the congressional baseball game. An individual named James Hodgkinson, 66 years old, liberal whack job, shot six people, you know, among them, the House Majority Whip Steve Scalise, which is still serving in the House to this day, Capitol Police Officer Crystal Griner, Congressional Aide Zach Barth, a lobbyist Matt Mika, all made the recovery, but it's a horrible thing to have happen. And this is getting closer to, you know, the point I'm going to try and make is that even when people are trying to do the right thing, you know, those things that are for the greater good, I mean, shit, who can't get behind helping kids and adults learn how to read?
Message!
You know, and boys and girls clubs to give these kids activities and directions so they don't fall victim to the streets. And yeah, don't let the fact of the monuments in the museums and the White House fool you. D.C.'s a rough town. I know, at least for a while in the 80s, it was the murder capital of the country.
Give them a heater.
You know, so these people are trying to do the right thing and raise money and give to, in many cases, their adopted community. You know, they're doing it because they work there and spend a better portion of their lives there, away from their actual home states. But yeah, and I will even go back in and remove the liberal nut job off of it. You know what? Because any extremist is a nut job. And to me, they're all pieces of shit. It's as simple as that. And then just the other day, they were playing this game. And as is, you know, sadly par for the course these days, a group of protesters, in this case, it was a group of climate protesters.
There's no crying in baseball!
Stormed the field, you know, running around trying to draw attention to themselves. And, you know, these shitbags are from a group called Climate Defiance.
There's no crying in baseball!
And they're out there, I guess, you know, protesting the fossil fuel industry and saying that, you know, these figures in Washington are, you know, guilty by association because of those, you know, lobbyists and whatnot that are continuing to, you know, aid big business when it comes to these things and the raping of the planet and global warming. And it just goes on and on. But you know what, folks? Who gives a shit?
Just a bit outside.
I mean, we see it all the time. We're trying to go about our business, and there's some yahoo that's either going to, you know, what do they do, glue their face to the road so you can't get around them, you know, or get to work on time. Then you got, you know, these little artsy-fartsy kids, especially in Europe. They're defacing famous works of art, all willy-nilly, throwing tomato soup on it. And, you know, just last week they got the brand-new picture of King Charles up there in a museum. And these two assholes run up, and they're sticking up giant faces of, like, Wallace and Gromit, or some, you know, I guess you had to be British to get the humor and the message or whatever, or be a fan of Wallace and Gromit. But, you know, it's, and the thing is, they've got all these works of art now behind plastic, which was the case with this painting, so they're saying, don't worry, it's not damaged. But, you know, who wants to look at the Mona Lisa, you know, through a foot of glass or in a separate room or on closed circuit TV or whatever it's come down to at this point, you know? I mean, God forbid they defame these sculptures, and it's like they're trying to get their message across by ruining some of those few things, like objective art, that bring people from all walks of life together. You know, the technical term for it is a happening, just like this baseball game is a happening. And it's for the betterment of the community that these politicians serve. Do you really think your shenanigans are going to attract attention?
No. No, man.
Or generate interest in your cause? I mean, are people really that stupid? I don't know. And then, of course, you know, there's like a small group at the other side of the stadium. I think there was like four of them. And they stand up with their Palestinian flag and they're waving at and chanting whatever the hell they're chanting. And I'm just like, whatever. You know, it was almost like the news put the camera on them for a second just to make fun of them, you know, because that's how ridiculous they are at this point. But yeah, this is the thing. People like to play, I don't know, spoil sport? I was at an event years ago where they were having a fundraising auction for muscular dystrophy research. And Well, it was kind of like date the event. It was in the 90s. And two of the prizes, I guess, that people were bidding on were mink stoles. Okay? Let's face it. You know, ladies, who doesn't love a mink? A man walking around in a fur coat's a little weird. Might be a pimp. I don't know. But, yeah, for the ladies, they love the minks. So somebody wins this. And this, you know, by the time they got to this auction, the event was, like, say, an hour in already. And the good folks at PETA had a plant in the audience who rushes the stage as this woman is putting on this mink stole she just won the bidding for. And this little backbiting harpy throws a bag of blood on her and starts ranting and raving about God knows what. And, you know, a couple burly security guards appear out of nowhere, grab her, and give her, like, the Fresh Prince treatment when Uncle Phil throws the French Prince's friend out the front door. Yeah, it's like that. So we're all looking at each other like, wow, that was pretty intense. And, you know, she was like a little Patty Hearst there. She just kept there with her mouth shut, but she was programmed and like a sleeper cell, like a little tiny waif-like Manchurian candidate.
Usually one must go to a bowling alley to meet a woman of your stature. Yes.
Well, it gets better because then they're going to, you know, keep auctioning off this other stuff. Now the auction comes up for the second mink stall.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
And it's about 30 minutes after the first one had struck. There was another one in the audience. Now that's, you got to have ice water in your veins. You just sit there quiet, you know, and pantomiming looks of incredulousness like everybody else. Meanwhile, you're in on it. Oh, man, can't make this shit up. So, yeah, sure enough, just she pulls the exact same routine, throws some kind of goo on the woman. Security gets her, you know, second verse, same as the first. Take her, whoop, throws her right out the front door. Don't let the knob hit you. But that's, you know, how these people are. And I think it's because, sadly, they don't fear any kind of repercussion. So there was a guy that jumped onto the field the other day at a Cincinnati Reds game. I don't know what his shtick was. He was probably just drunk and, you know, wanted to do something to make his friends laugh. I think he was only like 19 or so. But he jumps onto the field, does a somersault right in front of the security guard or the cop, and starts running away. Cop just tases him. Drops him like a bad habit. I only wish I was there to see it because I'm sure, like, the crowd was, like, going nuts, you know? But, yeah, in the case of these eight fools that jumped the field at the congressional baseball game, they, you know, got wrestled to the ground. They were arrested. But seriously, there's no punishment that's going to dissuade anybody else from doing this. And even the morons that blocked the road, I'm just saying, you know, some people are a little skittish behind the wheel and they watch too much, you know, evening news. And if somebody starts surrounding me as I'm driving, I'm likely to hit that gas pedal just out of fear for my own safety.
And this is what I call a target-rich environment.
Right? Because the next thing you know, they're crawling all over your car, smashing in the windows or whatever. So if I'm coming up on the road, you know, I drive to work every day like everybody else. And if on one of the bridges I take, there's a line of people there saying, no, you can't get by. Well, I'm guessing my first move is to get out of the car and try and, quote unquote, make some space. But, yeah, if not, if they start, like, attaching themselves to the roadway, I don't know what's going to happen. But it's not going to be good, you know, because I don't buy into the concept, A, of violent protesting and making a scene. I never bought into that, and I still don't now in my ripe old age. But I think something needs to be done because these things tend to just keep escalating. And then there's always that case of one-upmanship. And you got to make an example out of somebody. I think the tasing is a great start. I applaud that officer for doing that. You know, no permanent damage done. But that fool will think twice between the tasing and the arrest of doing that again. The other ones, I don't know. I you know. Maybe, I don't know. A couple of those tasers should have went off accidentally. those eight clowns that stormed the field at the congressional baseball game. I don't know. Maybe that would have helped. But anyway, that's my opening. I don't know if that's a riff or a rant. That's more like a rant because I just, don't care for protesters and people disrupting the greater good for their own agenda. You know, we live in a society, folks. Majority rules. Whether you like it or not, majority rules. And you don't have a leg to stand on because you know what? Without causing disruptions, without damaging things, Martin Luther King got amazing results. Mahatma Gandhi got amazing results. You don't have a leg to stand on. You can never force your views on anybody because you can't tell people how to live. I don't care what it is, whether it's drinking alcohol, whether it's getting abortions, across the board. You can't dictate a lifestyle to people. They're going to do what they want to do, and they're going to find a way to do it.
You're goddamn right.
So that's what's up with that. Moving on, because we're going to have a completely different subtopic tonight. Something a little more celebratory. Yeah, like that. So let's lead into it with our middle gem today. A special little tune by Bruce Springsteen called Blinded by the Light. And we're going to play that for you right now. And we'll be back in a few minutes with some more things and stuff.
Madman, drummers, bombers, and Indians in the summer with a teenage diplomat. In the dumps with the mumps as the adolescent pumps his way into his hat. With a boulder on my shoulder, feeling kinda older, I trip the merry-go-round. With this very unpleasing sneezing and wheezing, the Calliope crashed to the ground. Some old hot head shot was heading for a hot spot, snapping his fingers, clapping his hands. In some flesh wild mascot was tied to a lover's knot with a whatnot in her hand. And now young Scott with a slingshot finally found a tender spot and throws his lover in the sand. And some bloodshot forget-me-not whisper daddies with an earshot, save the buckshot, turn up the band. Was blinded by the light. Oh, cut loose like a deuce, another runner in the night. Blinded by the light. She got down, but she never got tight. But she'll make it all right. Some brimstone, baritone, and ice cyclone rolling stone. And some new moon chaperone stand in the corner all alone watching the young girls dance. And some fresh old moonstone was messing with his frozen zone to remind him of the feeling of romance. Yeah, he was blinded by the light. To go outside. And little Early Pearly came by in her curly whirly and asked me if I needed a ride. Oh, some hazard from Harvard stumped on beers playing backyard bombardier. Yes, and Scotland Yard was trying hard. They sent some dude with a calling card and said, do what you like, but don't do it here. Well, I jumped up, turned around, spit in the air, fell on the ground, asked him which was the way back home. He said, take wish those boys had left too soon. And some getting that handicap was complaining that it caught the clap from some mousetrap he bought last night. Well, I unsnapped the skull cap between his ears. I saw a gap and figured he'd be alright. He was divided by the light. Cut loose like a goose, another runner in the night. Blinded by the light. Mama always told me not to look into the sights of the sun.
And we're back, gang. I hope you enjoyed that tune. I know I did. Yes, of course, that's the one and only Boss, Bruce Springsteen, doing Blinded by the Light, which he originally did in 1973. That was part of the Greetings from Asbury Park album. And some of you were thinking, I didn't even know he did that song, harumph. Well, no, he did. You might be thinking of Manfred Mann's Earth Band, who covered it in 1977 and kind of garbled the lyrics. So, yeah, remember, kids, it's revved up like a deuce, referencing the Ford V8 motor from 1932. Not a feminine product, nothing about juice. Yeah, it's revved up like a deuce with a D, as in Daniel. All right, we went with Blinded by the Light. And you'll see why, because our subtopic tonight, a literary birthday. And I like saying literary when I'm referring to comic books, because before you know it, it's going to be the last kind of literature we have left. It is, so DC Comics says, they're celebrating the 80th birthday of Green Lantern, when in fact, it's actually 84. The original Green Lantern, a character by the name of Alan Scott, was created by Martin O'Dell and Bill Finger back in 1940. And you're starting to see a lot of these anniversaries now because, with the exception of Superman, who was pre-World War II, you're seeing now like everybody from Batman to Green Arrow to Aquaman to Captain America and now Green Lantern. A lot of these famous superheroes came to light during World War II. True story. So here's the deal. When Alan Scott was the Green Lantern, he was a train engineer, and there was a horrible derailment, and he comes across this magic lantern, and of course, the ring, and it's able to create anything the wearer can imagine. Okay? Kind of runs on willpower. So according to the mythos, green is the color of willpower. The weakness to the ring in the original incarnation was it was ineffective against anything made of wood. That's kind of a weird, for lack of a better word, kryptonite to have against a superpower. Anything wood? Damn, that's kind of harsh. So they did away with that. When the character of a Green Lantern was modernized in 1959, with test pilot Hal Jordan becoming the Green Lantern, recruited by a dying member of the Green Lantern Corps. See, so there's a whole mythos surrounding the Green Lanterns. They're all over the galaxies, and there's one for every space sector. It's like 3,600, I think, maybe a little more. And they're basically, well, it is a paramilitary organization, but think of them as space cops. They're just keeping order throughout the galaxy. Now, as the years would go on, they actually teamed up Green Lantern with Green Arrow, and they had an ongoing series where they traveled the country, kind of just seeing what America was all about. It was an exodus, okay? And they dealt with a lot of subject matter that was way ahead of its time for a medium such as a comic book. They dealt with racism in the country. They dealt with drug abuse. I mean, all different kinds of vices and the frailty of the human character. And through that, they introduced another character, the ring bearer known as John Stewart, a black man, which is refreshing because back then, if you were black and you were a superhero, black was normally part of your name, a la Black Panther, Black Lightning, so on and so forth. And he had a famous interaction with Hal Jordan saying, you know, you do this for the purple skins on this planet, and, you know, you help the people with the pink skins on this planet, but, you know, what about people with the black skins on this planet? And makes you think, you know, and it made everybody think at the time, and they're thinking to themselves, well, all right, at someday this cat, John Stewart, is going to be a Green Lantern, which he is. And he's the one now that you see more often than any other represented in the movies and the cartoons and even in the comic books. But there's been quite a few. My personal favorite was a guy with a red head, bold cut, and he was a bit of a psychopath, but he kept getting hit in the head, so he was a little mentally unstable. His name is Guy Gardner, and he will be featured in the upcoming reboot of Superman. He's the Green Lantern that's going to be represented there. And on the upcoming extended series on HBO Max called Lanterns, it's going to be Hal Jordan and John Stewart as kind of a irreverent take on their True Detective series. So that should be interesting. But all these things are coming into the same universe now that DC's kind of trying to get their shit together in the cinema. So, yeah, clearly this little nerd is totally, totally looking forward to it. And it should be a good time. So, hopefully, they can forget about that absolutely terrible Green Lantern movie they did a few years ago with Ryan Reynolds. Or I should say, I hope Ryan Reynolds would let us forget about it. It's like, stop beating a dead horse. The script was crap. The villains they chose were crap.
But nothing has ever sucked more ass than this.
The outfits were crap. I mean, the way they represented, everything was crap. It was almost like it was rushed, or more directly, rather than rushed, it was just DC Comics doing what they always do, which is just, you know, they screw with the source material. You know, the reason that the Christopher Nolan Batman movies were so good is because they had an origin of him. They had an origin of, you know, him meeting the Joker. They managed to somewhat successfully pull off Bane and Ra's al Ghul, and because they kept it fairly tight to the source material. All their other movies, with the exception of maybe the first Christopher Reeve Superman, they got to go screwing with it. And they need to stop that. So hopefully they'll right that wrong. And because it's a favorite character of mine, I just want them to do a good job so other people, especially those getting exposed to the character for the first time, can appreciate it, you know, the way I do, because it's such a rich, storied history. I don't know how many different titles and issues are out about Green Lantern at this point, but, you know, there's so much there to work with, and all the best stories have already been told. It's a nice, rich tapestry full of diverse characters, so they don't need to change anybody around. You don't need to make them a minority or give them an alternate lifestyle just so it, you know, checks off all the boxes. No, there's a lot of varied everybody. Everybody's represented. That's what's part of its charm, I think. All right. So that was, I should say, part one of the subtopic tonight. Part two is an ongoing battle that I've had here at BigBoomRadio.com Studios with, of all things, a mouse. Although it might have been a rat. Let's just say this. I was awakened one evening by a racket going on in the kitchen cabinets under the sink. Something was in the house. Something was rattling around. B, our director of security, wanted no part of it. My fearless protector looking at me like, are you going to do something about this? And Yeah, I didn't even want to open up the cabinet because I don't know if someone's going to like jump out and try and latch onto my jugular vein or not. But I figured just as much as that, it was probably a really big mouse because it kind of live out in the woods and I get field mice this time of year. But to be knocking everything down and making so much of a commotion, I'm thinking maybe it was what they called a Norway rat, which isn't your typical New York City subway dragging pizza down the steps kind of rat, but it's fairly large. So, I am a man. So what do men do? We solve problems. We solve problems with tools and or stuff we can invent and traps and, yeah, the concept of building a better mousetrap. So, one day in the daylight, I locate two sources where I think this thing could come up and visit. And I figured, well, let me buy some of that sealant that they sell in the stores. It's like expanding foam, and then you can cut it if you want to you know, make it more discreet. Screw discreet. I just wanted to fill in these gaps and then lump on as much of this stuff as possible to keep the critters out, right? Well, it lasted about a day, and then again, middle of the night, enough, you know, loud enough to wake me up on the other side of the house. I hear this thing, which kind of sounds like backgammon dice getting shaken around in a canister. A little muffled, but, you know, definitely loud. This little son of a bitch ate through the foam, probably about 6 inches of this dense foam, just nibbled right through it. To get at what? I have no idea. There's no food under there, right? Also, I had laid down assorted glue traps, which normally works like a charm on the little field mice. And then I had two of these, like, fancier kind of traps in there. Well, mice are smart. Just like the cartoons, the Jerry Mouse and Steamboat Willie and Mickey and, you know, Fievel, the Animaniacs. They're all very smart. I didn't give them credit for how smart they are. And apparently, after doing some reading and some YouTube watching, rodents, when they come in, they take note of everything and where it is. And if there's something new there, they will avoid it. And if something changes about it, they take notice of that. So they were just walking around the other traps that I laid out. And yes, I even called in a professional. He laid some professional traps down. I think he got the rat. But now I still got the little critters, the little baby field mice, right? So I buy more foam. Now I'm also integrating steel wool in with the foam, thinking, well, there's no way in hell they're going to chew through this. And then I see these videos on YouTube where people create a mixture of baking soda and then some type of flour or muffin mix, you know, mixed in with the baking powder in a little Tupperware container, cut a hole in the side, and this will attract the mice. And due to the unfortunate lack of the ability to burp or fart, the mice will eat this stuff, and their little stomachs will expand. They'll experience some immediate discomfort, and then hopefully go back to where they came from and die quietly someplace else. Well, heard me some rattling a couple nights later. I'm like, oh, okay, somebody's taking. And when I opened up the cabinet the next morning, I saw this little teeny tiny mouse claw print. So I'm like, okay, it's not the rat, it's the little field mouse. This little guy probably met his demise. Next night I hear nothing. Night or two later, there's a rustling around again. Much quieter, mind you, but I could still like hear stuff clanking around. So next day I look at the thing and it's like even more of the stuff had been eaten. And again, he had chewed through the stuff and disappeared. So I reinforced all that. And as of late, I haven't heard anything. Now, the other spot than the kitchen vanity cabinet was an opening underneath my bathroom vanity, where I understand he was also making his appearances and Irish goodbyes. And I actually caught him or her trying to take one of B's little buddy biscuits into the opening where he was coming up from, but it was too big. So I looked under the thing with the flashlight, and all I could see was like this little biscuit, right, getting tugged and slapped against the thing, but he couldn't get it down there. But he did have the audacity to actually fling one of the glue traps out into the center of the bathroom to say, yeah, good luck, fatso. You're not going to get me with that. So I had done some stonework in the bathroom years ago, kind of like a little accent wall, and I had some slats of this stone left. So there I am on the floor sealing up this opening like a scene from the Cask of Amontillado.
Benefits of a classical education.
Right. Thanks, Hans. And so now it's walled up. So that's walled up. He has not come back under the sink because that foam and the steel wool trap is in place. So I think the problem's resolved. But damn, if that didn't take me to the limit, made me feel kind of stupid. So it's like one of those things that there's, you know, always an element of truth in every stereotype. There's a reason that mother-in-laws are called pains in the asses, because generally they are. And now I know that apparently there's a reason why the mice in cartoons are always portrayed as being kind of bright, because guess what? They are. All right? All right. Time for another gem, gang, and we're going to stick with the Green Lantern theme as well as give a nod and a tip of the hat to Pride Month. And despite what you think I may think about Pride Month and the LGBTQ community, the truth of the matter is, I'm all about live and let live. You got one life, you're not hurting anybody, you do whatever you want to do, and ain't none of my business. It's as simple as that. So, while I don't like different lifestyles getting thrown at me constantly, with the understanding that it's like, what, 12% of the population? Yeah, so marketing people and big business need to stop pretending like it's 50. That's my only lament, because it becomes just patronizing really, really quickly, you know? Look, equality is about blending in and being anonymous, folks. I hate to break this to you, but any group of society or any person that struggles for equality, you know, equality doesn't mean you get the spotlight. Equality means you blend in just like everybody else. Take the bus to work that day and work that 9 to 5. That's equality, folks. Sorry, it's not that glamorous, but that's what's up. But regardless, I'm going to go with a little tune by the epic early heavy metal band Dio doing Rainbow in the Dark. And we'll be right back in a few minutes with some more stuff and a wrap-up. Stay tuned.
Me!
Yeah, huh? Ronnie James Dio. Man's an icon. That, like I said, was Dio doing Rainbow in the Dark off of their Monster album, 1983's Holy Diver. Definitely a very cool album cover, too, you know, if you've ever seen it. And that sucker went up to number 12 on the U.S. rock tracks, and the album went double platinum. So, yeah, they were good. They were doing. And, you know, we got a little bit of everything there, you know, because along with the Green Lantern, they got lanterns of all these different colors, and every color represents a different, let's say, attribute, you know, because there is emotions, there's anger, and there's jealousy, and but there's also, you know, hope and healing. So, yeah, I got a ring for every color in a rainbow, just like, you know, just like a rainbow, there's all different kinds of lifestyles out there. Live and let live, show respect, and be kind. That's all you got to do, folks. We're overthinking this way, way too much. Now, in other news, listenership to this very podcast, I am so humbled to say, is way up over the last couple months. Thank you, everyone around the world. Tell your friends, because apparently the word's getting out. See, it only took, like, what, 173 episodes and countless hours of work. But you know what? People like it. Maybe they like the music that we pick out. Maybe it's a subject matter. I don't know. I'm not complaining. I'm loving it. I am loving it. Let's see what else we got. Whole new slate of shows coming up next week because I'm always in here recording stuff. You know, we got 9 original shows on Big Boom Radio. 9. In addition to playing the greatest rock music of all time, 24/7. It really is rock and roll heaven, 24/7. Seriously. So one of our other shows, the Classic Rock Showcase, has a new entry. Nazareth joins the fray. And like I say in the introduction in that episode, if I had to, well, this is me thinking really highly of myself. If I had to pick a soundtrack for the cinematic biography of my life, you might think I would pick a Van Halen song, because I always say that they're my favorite band, and you would be wrong. You might also guess that one time I said it would be I'm a Man by Chicago. Nope, wouldn't be that one. It would be the tune by Nazareth, which everybody always gets wrong, because I don't think the title's in the song. Hair of the Dog. Yeah, Hair of the Dog by Nazareth. That is a badass tune. Badass. If you get a chance, check it out, listen to it, or just wait until we do that episode. I think it's going to be July 1st that it gets played, if I remember correctly. But yeah, Classic Rock Showcase is just one of our 9 shows that we do. Quick rundown. Mondays, we do Monday Night Hair Metal at 8 p.m. Tuesdays, we do the British Incursion. Every station has a British invasion. We do the Incursion. It's like McDowell's from Coming to America. That also plays at 8 p.m., and that's hosted by my good friend, Sir Nigel Pennyworth. All right? Yeah, I got a Brit on the staff. Then Wednesday night, we do New Wave Wednesdays at 8 p.m., all about the glorious decade of music known as the 80s. Then Thursday, where it's 3 in a row all damn day, we take a little breather at noon and do 3 for Thursday Alternative. So there's some of your favorite alt-rock bands there for that hour, doing 3 in a row. On Fridays, we've got the Friday Hot Lunch at noon for a solid hour. It's music that has to do with a particular theme, and that theme changes every week, right? Because let's face it, normally by noon on Friday, we're all thinking about the weekend anyway, so we're not worth a damn. Then, if it is a week that we do the podcast, that will air on Fridays at 8 and 5 and then 8 p.m., Saturday morning at 10, we got Saturday Morning 70s, taking you back to that silly little decade known as the 70s. And then at night, 8 p.m., we got Saturday Night Ska, playing all kinds of fun ska, reggae, rocksteady, you name it. And then, of course, Sunday, rounding out the week, the flagship show, the bitch that put us on the map, it's Johnny's Rockabilly Rumble, 2 hours from 7 until 9. And that one's got quite a following. So tune in. Must be doing something right there, folks. Just top shelf rockabilly, psychobilly, surf rock. I sprinkle in a little ska, a little punk maybe. Sometimes some weird stuff just thrown in there. It's a good, good time. And hey, It helps you stretch out the weekend just that much longer, right? Get those last couple drinks in, those last couple cigarettes or whatever you're smoking. Good, good time. So I tell you what, friends, that's going to about do it for this episode of Riffs and Rants. Thank you so much for joining me. Have a fantastic weekend. And you know what? Like I always say, we'll see you on the flip side.